Welcome back to Copper Country Today. I'm your host, Rick Allen, and joining me in studio right now is our state representative, Scott Dianda. Scott, welcome back to Copper Country Today.
Great to be here today, Rick. Thank you for having me on.
It's always good to have you come in, and since the last time we've talked, you've made a major announcement.
Yes, I made the announcement that we are going to run for the 110th House District seat. I've served the last 2 years, the last two terms, and I am going to run for the third term. And it has been an absolute pleasure to serve the people of the 110th District in these seven counties. You know, I'm very humbled to be able to go to Lansing to be the voice for those folks. And, you know, I try to do my best every day to make sure that we bring our voice to Lansing on all the issues, and we make sure we take care of the constituency. Because it's not about writing legislation and putting more laws on the books with people's names on it. It's about taking care of the people and the citizens and the taxpayers and giving them a value for what we're doing down there.
Now, typically for a lawmaker, his first time in Lansing when you were elected two terms ago, you know, you're learning the ropes, you're getting used to the committees, the hearings, everything that goes on, and then you're definitely by your second term, you're seeing a lot of things move. Now your third term, is there like a sense of, you know, an urgency of, you know, we got to get certain things done before basically it's time to hand the baton off?
Yeah, there is a very concern that I have from day one down there is just trying to get people employed in these seven counties. That's been right from day one. I knew that was the objective going down there, was to try to make sure that we created an environment where we could bring people up here to be able to employ our people, to be able to grow our jobs and our economy up here, to be able to make sure that we attract these entrepreneurs that want to come up here and live and develop a business, and, you know, supporting higher ed to be able to look at what the Smart Zone at Michigan Tech has done, bringing in new people from outside of our area that want to create business and get educated here and, you know, eventually stay, create businesses and get patents on their wonderful ideas, whether it's intellectual properties, whether it's producing a product. You know, that's really been my focus, is just to make it where we can do business up here, because I see one thing very clearly across the state of Michigan is the fact we're all in the same boat together when it comes to the economy. No matter where we're at in all 83 counties, just like these seven, we need more business, we need more people working, because once we get people working, that changes the game. It gets people on their own, they all looking at better wages, they got insurance, they don't have to be on a lot of programs. You know, and it just, there's a better feeling out there when you get people working. Everybody's upbeat and everybody has a job and they got money and they're proud. And I think that's the most thing that we got to focus on together in our discussions in Lansing. How are we going to get more business in the state? How are we going to get people working so they can save for their retirement and it's a good place to live and grow and raise their children up here? And we got everything up here. This is the premier place in the west end of Upper Michigan to live. We've got the best. I always say that. The people are what make it the best. And our local schools, our higher ed, our hospitals, you know, all our professional services around here, we're just so blessed to be here. And I really appreciate trying to continue that conversation this next term.
What can be done specifically to move that needle? I mean, we've seen, through the Smart Zone and efforts from Michigan Tech, a little bit of progress on the high-tech side. I'm still not seeing a lot of jobs, you know, per se here, especially once you get out of the Houghton Hancock area, then it really drops off. I agree with you that this is a great place to live, and boy, if you've got a job, why would you want to live anywhere else? But without those jobs, we continue to bleed our youth. They head out, they get their great education here, and they head out, or they come to Michigan Tech and they get, you know, their education there, and they take that knowledge somewhere else, of trying to keep it here and grow that kind of a hard base economy that we need.
Well, I think where it all starts is just through the K-12 education system, with a local control of our school boards and the curriculum that we want to teach here, to be able to have the highest skilled people. And I'm talking about not just the folks that are coming up and that want to be able to, you know, go to Michigan Tech or go to Finlandia or to go to Goyebic, but just, you know, our K-12 system, where we start looking at educating our kids and giving them a good skilled trade to be able to have this kind of a workforce up here that's going to be trained, that we can attract business to. I think that's the biggest thing. When you talk to a lot of businesses that are trying to start and they're coming into the area looking around, They're looking for highly skilled people, and I think it starts at a very young age. I think that we really got to start taking a look at some of these models they're doing in other countries like Finland, where they're identifying what these kids want to do at a very young age in grade school, and we start putting them on the path. You know, I think that a lot of those skilled trades positions, they're in demand. I mean, we're losing that. We cannot have everybody thinking that we're going to sit behind a desk. I mean, we got to have our skilled trades people, and today that's in every aspect of industry. And I think that when I go out and I've talked to the Michigan manufacturers or the Chamber of Commerce, I mean, everybody's looking for skilled trades people. And I think that's what makes us very unique up here. If we have the people who are trained that want to stay in this area, and when you have businesses that are looking at relocating into places, this is very attractive to them.
How do you feel about investing into the rail system? I've heard a number of people talking about just trying to, you know, make that a little bit more user-friendly, and make it more available both in freight and passenger.
I think that's a great idea because we built this area in the Copper Country by rail and shipping. That's why we got the canal here. That's why we got Ontonagon Harbor. You know, we had rail spurs everywhere we go. We ride around on our snowmobiles and our four-wheelers, and we're cross-country skiing. We're doing that on railroad beds that were designed for one thing, commerce. It opened up the West. It opened up the UP. We had our mining interests. You got to really focus on bringing back that rail, because rail is the cheapest way to ship other than putting a boat on Lake Superior or on the ocean. So I'm thinking that, you know, in my mind, we really got to focus on getting that back. And I'm, you know, always trying to encourage anybody that can help us do that to get involved with the process. We got to get that rail up and running, because that's what's going to help the mines that want to be up here. That's going to help us as consumers by bringing goods in and out of here. And that's the big part. When we look at the freight and what it costs to bring in goods and services, that's the other piece when you're trying to develop new businesses, because transportation costs on passengers and also with freight is a big deal.
Yeah, because the feeling that, you know, that we're isolated up here becomes so much less once you sort of eliminate the problem of travel back and forth. And I keep throwing in the passenger as well, because, you know, it's expensive to fly out of the airports and get anywhere here. It takes a lot to drive back and forth here. Sure. You pretty much can't do it during the winter a lot of times.
Right.
But, you know, you started introducing passenger rail with lines to Milwaukee, Chicago, Detroit. You know, then all of a sudden, I think it opens up a whole new world.
It certainly does. And we go back to the historical point of view up here, and that's what I use in a lot of my thought process when I'm looking at things across the state, making decisions for us in the seven counties, is the fact that, you know, we had a railroad that was up here where you could get it on the rail, and you could get in a passenger car in Calumet and then up in Chicago in 6.5-7 hours later. I mean, that was a heck of a luxury that we had up here to move people back and forth. And I really think that that opens up all of the commercial traffic, and it opens up passenger traffic, because we're seeing this in other areas across the state where, you know, they want to put in these rail lines. There's the M1 line that's in Lower Michigan that's going to create a trail from Midtown into the downtown Detroit of Detroit. So, you know, those are the things that we're starting to see more interest in, because there's a lot of people that are, you know, especially in Michigan, aging population. We're starting to see a lot of people that don't want to drive that much. And it's, you know, passenger service is a big deal.
Now, with the investment into our infrastructure, which that would be part of, you know, whenever people start talking about that, there's a certain element that gets a little nervous, you know, about investing, you know, tax money into building up these systems. But one, they provide jobs, and it's not a new idea. I mean, our country's been doing, you know, these type of projects for decades, for, you know, really think of hundreds of years. But yet lately, I think, you know, there's more concern about where that money goes.
Well, I think people are definitely gun shy in today's day. I mean, we're looking at $54 billion that we spend at the state level right now. And I think people are really wanting to make sure that we create a better infrastructure for the future. But I think, like myself, I'm always looking at what we're spending and what kind of value we are getting for our dollar now. And I think that, you know, when we take a look at the transportation system in Michigan, you know, we ended up having a $3.8 billion budget for the Department of Transportation. We are going to take another $600 million now out of general fund and put that into the roads. You know, I think that we really got to look at where we're spending the money. I think that we have to exactly give the taxpayers and the citizens of the state of Michigan a value for what we're spending currently, because I think that's the disconnect with the population right now. We all know we have to fix the infrastructure. Nothing has been done in 50 to 60 to 80 years on our roads and bridges, our water systems. I think that people really want to make sure that we're getting a good value first before we put any more money in it. So I think that everybody's out there wanting to fix things, but it takes a lot of money. And the money that we're spending now is a lot.
Hopefully one of the good things that comes out of, let's say, a major tragedy like the Flint water crisis is the identification of how old our infrastructure is becoming. You know, we built these things 100 years ago, in some cases in our area, longer than that. And they don't last forever. They have to be upgraded. They have to be replaced. And then that costs money. The flip side of that is that also will employ people to be able to do that.
That is correct. It puts a lot of people to work. And the situation in Flint that has happened with the water system is absolutely just a tragedy for what's happening. All that system has fell apart, you know, and that comes down to, again, a lot of bad management. I think that, you know, that's the discussion that we're having in Lansing. The system was old, but the precautions to put in the water treatment that would have cost $100 a day, you know, that did not get done. And I'm really concerned about some of the decisions that are made in these systems, because instead of spending $100 a day to treat the water, which we could have done, but that did not look well to the emergency manager that was in place in the Flint system. So now, you know, we have appropriated over $50 million already. So again, we come back to value for our constituents and our taxpayers. So now, instead of spending the $100 a day on water treatment to put the chemicals in the water, now it's going to be multiple hundreds of millions of dollars to fix this system. And, you know, it was just over bad management. So I think, you know, the oversight, again, is something that I'm always talking about in Lansing with my other senators and representatives to say, you know, that's why we're down here, for oversight of state government and agencies. Now we're going to start having a lot of committee hearings on oversight. This should have been done before. I mean, you know, we're in place down there to question the way departments run. You know, that's also the big job for the governor and the executive office, is to oversee the state agencies. But ultimately, we have that oversight ability, and I think that we failed in it.
Governor Rick Snyder is going to be testifying on March 17th to his role and what he knew or didn't know about the Flint water crisis. What are you looking to hear?
Well, I'm just looking at the first and foremost thing is a plan to fix this system and get it taken care of. You know, we can point the fingers at what was done and what was wrong and everything else, but immediately the water system needs to have a plan for a long-term fix. I want to see also the National Guard that's assembled down in Flint right now. I want them to be able to have water tankers to bring water delivery to people's homes, because I think that, you know, it's wonderful to be able to deliver the water with these 20-ounce bottles, but I'm very concerned with the sanitary conditions for folks to be able to flush their toilets. I'm concerned that they're not having enough water to be able to bathe. I mean, this is the things that why we have the Michigan National Guard. And I think that, you know, they have the ability with their water tankers to start bringing water in, and I'd like to see that done immediately. And I think that that's something that needs to be done. And I have voiced that opinion because I think that we just get a better handle on that. Being up in the UP, a lot of us, you know, have camps, and we know how to work with little bits of water, but still, you got to have quality water, and you have to have a good quantity of it. And a 20-ounce bottle, to me, I think is a joke. I think that, you know, if you're trying to run your household on a 20-ounce bottle of water, I mean, I think they should have some kind of a program set up with the National Guard to bring the water trucks in and give everybody a 30-gallon container, and so they got a water in there to flush the toilets and be able to cook with it or bathe with it or whatever. I mean, this is just basics.
It is a shame that an idea that was meant to save a couple of $1 million may cost the state billions in the long run. So definitely more coming from that. There's been an unfortunate report about the veterans home in Grand Rapids. You came out in, you know, and voiced your opinion about, you know, the mess that's down there. I'm going to give you an opportunity to do that now.
Well, what has happened in the Grand Rapids veterans home is just absolutely wrong. We've got the people in these homes like the Jacob Eddy Center in Marquette and Grand Rapids, who have literally gave us the opportunity to be free in this country. And we have to take care of these folks to the most best ability that we have. And that was in a failure in Grand Rapids. The Jacob Eddy Center in Marquette is the model. We've got people down there that on average got over 20 years of service with the Jacob Eddy Center. Our veterans in Marquette, you know, I've been through there multiple times. I had family members down there. I got friends that are currently down there. They do a wonderful job taking care of our people. And then the audit came out from the Auditor General about what was happening with the contracted place in Grand Rapids. And this just goes down to the point that, you know, we're using some of this privatization to try to save money like the Flint water, and we're not getting value for our veterans. And I think that, you know, we had some people that were in charge that they resigned, and now they're going to give them a job again in the department. I think that's crazy. I think that we have an ability to be able to make it right. And I want to really stress this, and I have testified in committee 2 years ago when they started having some problems, and we had a committee hearing with the Senate. I went and testified on it, and I just told them one thing. We got the best in Marquette with the Jacob Eddy Center. Have those people come down, the administrators, and help Grand Rapids to get them up and running and get it right. That was not done. So here we are 2 years later with a report that shows that we are not in compliance. We're not taking care of our veterans. And I think it is just the worst thing we could ever had a report on, besides the roads, their vets, and not having the treatment that they need.
Well, what makes the Grand Rapids facility different than the Jacob Eddy one?
Well, you know, about 4 years ago, they ended up starting to go through and just privatizing these services, you know, and then when they privatized the services, you know, we just had such a big changeover with staff and just the quality of what they were doing for folks. Again, you know, when you got one that is just never had any type of problems up here in Marquette, where you got people that are long-term employees, they're taking care of our veterans to the best that they can do. And then when we go and we privatize and we want to save money on paying people, you know, you get what you pay for. And I'll tell you what, to be able to try to save a couple of dollars to have somebody not being taken care of is just, I can't even imagine this. It's just, that's why I was so disturbed with this whole process that was going on down there. It was just that we knew this 2 years ago. We testified as a lot of legislators to say, we want this taken care of. And I guess it fell on a deaf ear. And I mean, to me, this is just another example of why we elect people to go in Lansing and have legislative oversight of these committees. You know, it's the responsibility of the executive office to run the departments, but it's also our ability to oversee what's going on in state government. And we have to. This is a prime example of, you know, not getting a value again. And this is on lives.
When I saw the report, and all I can do is describe it as shameful of what was happening at the veterans' home in Grand Rapids, but I also saw it as, you know, another black eye to veterans' services overall. And if you talk to a lot of veterans, their opinion of, you know, the care that they have or benefits that are available to them, you know, their opinion is that there's not, you know, there's not enough help, or there's nowhere they go for care. But yet Michigan is, you know, last or close to last when it comes to taking advantage of things that are available for veterans. And, you know, if you can't show that we are trying to take care of veterans, that you're not going to change that opinion that we're not doing anything as a state.
Well, and that's, too, Rick, where it falls on us as the elected officials to make sure that the word gets out there for all the services that are available. You know, and I constantly try to make sure that it's public knowledge. You know, I come on different radio programs to make sure that people understand that there are programs available to them, you know. And the other thing that we try to do, too, is to put out notices through our media, and we send out to the constituents a newsletter, and we always try to make sure that on that stuff they have the ability to get what they need for veteran services. And also that falls on our congressional level people, both sides of the aisle, to be able to make sure that we're getting every dollar into Michigan for our veterans, and that they understand where to go and where to get it, and make sure that it's done in a proper, timely fashion.
Hmm. One of the big issues, certainly last winter and going into the spring, was the energy problems here in the Upper Peninsula. Then we get a very mild winter with low heating costs, and all of a sudden the problem's gone away. So is it gone? Is it solved? Or is it just waiting to come back?
I'll tell you what. What's happening with the energy right now is there was a bill package in the House and the Senate, and it really has hit a brick wall down there because of a lot of the other issues going on. Again, the Flint water situation, the educational fall down in Detroit area, and you know the education has been in the limelight again with the school systems in Detroit. You know, that's another case where, you know, we got a big system down there, and I try to relay the information that we're doing everything right up here in our seven counties. We have you know, the Houghton School, Dollar Bay, and Calumet that got state level top ranking. I mean, we're doing it right with $7,500 per head count. You know, downstate they get 12,000-14,000 in some of these areas, and our numbers and our testing scores are just, you know, they're through the roof. We're doing it right. So I guess that's the case too, where again with the energy, you know, we look at what we're doing up here, and that also can be a hindrance on getting businesses to invest up here. It also takes a big part of our budget is the fact that, you know, we're spending more money on energy than we are in Lower Michigan in a lot of areas. We have to come up with a long-term plan, and that's why it's so important for the UP to come up with an energy solution and plan. And we have the Upper Peninsula Energy Committee that has been formed, and while we're looking at why we can do things differently throughout the state, and we got a lot of difference with rates. I mean, we look at the UP in total. We have on the east end, we got 12 cents a kilowatt over in the Cloverland Electric area. You know, when you come on the west side, we're like 23.5 cents a kilowatt for power. So I think that we really got to take a look at long-term, what is the best thing for us? And one of the best things that we can do is produce power in the UP. And I am a very big, strong supporter of the Marquette situation with the Marquette Board of Water and Light. They have made a $75 million investment. They're going to do bonding. They are going to be putting in new systems, natural gas turbines, and they're going to be able to have about a 14 cent charge for a kilowatt hour. And I think that that's the biggest thing that we got to start looking at, is how are we going to produce our power in the UP to make it very efficient so we can afford the power and we're going to be able to grow a business. That's the biggest thing. That power situation is something that has to get right. We have to make sure that whatever legislation comes out, that we have the ability to have some choice in it. We got to make sure we got the ability to look at a structure for long term and our needs and how we're going to grow so it's adaptable. I think that's the biggest thing. We don't want to overbuild on power in the UP, but we don't want to underbuild. We got to have a good discussion and we have to have a good plan.
For our sources of power, are you referring to the alternative energies, be biomass, solar, wind, geothermal? Are these what you're referring to, or another kind of plant?
I think all of the above, and natural gas. I think we got to look at everything that can bring more power into the area where it's efficient. And I want to make sure that we look at this power situation where if one thing is lower in cost, we go down that road. But I don't want to have it where we put all the eggs in one basket and tie it all into natural gas, because then I'm really worried about the heating costs. So then if we use a lot of natural gas to make our power, is our heating for our homes and businesses going to increase? I think there's a balancing act there, but we need to bring everything to the table, and we got to have the discussion for long-term investments on what's going to be the most efficient and reliable source of energy.
With our last minute and a half or so here, I did want to ask you, even though it doesn't fall in your district, it's certainly important to the UP, but the Straits of Mackinac, because there's a lot of back and forth going over those pipelines that run down there. And, you know, some misinformation that's put out, you know, perceivably on both sides of the issue. Are you concerned at all?
I'm very concerned with it, Rick, and I'm glad you bring it up, because the fact is, you know, that pipeline has been there for a long time. They are doing the maintenance on it. We've got a lot of people in the UP that work to keep that thing going. And I think that we've got a very good partner in this with Michigan Tech Research over at the Great Lakes Center that are monitoring this with submergibles. And I think that we got an opportunity that if we need to have a new pipeline, then we can build one. And that will be one wonderful job creator for the UP. That would be another great project for new infrastructure. If it's needed, it got to be replaced. because we can never get to the point where we could have that kind of a crisis in the Straits of Mackinac that would literally affect the whole state of Michigan and Wisconsin and Illinois for all of our tourism, our industries, our fishing. It would just be a meltdown. So, I mean, if something needs to be done, we do have to have the oversight to do it and make sure it's right.
It's amazing how rare a common sense idea is. I've heard shut it down completely, and I've heard everything's going to be fine, don't worry. If it does spill, we can clean it up.
Yeah.
I never heard anybody suggest, why don't we just build a new one?
Well, I'll tell you what, if you need it, you got to take care of it.
Scott, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me on.
Copper Country Today, we'll be right back.